Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is the Dope Black Dad podcast. My name is Marvin Harrison and I'm coming smooth today. The reason why I feel so smooth is because I use Palmer's, not joking. No, that would have been a really good advert for something. I got to get sponsored.
I think you should just do the whole intro in that smooth voice. Should all do our smooth voices.
Okay. Yeah.
All right, cool. Ken might get excited now.
It's okay. If Ken gets excited, that means whoever's listening
I
or
have
watching
a very
will get
big
excited.
Gay fan base. I'm just letting you know. Oh, actually, bigger than the women fan base. So let this go down when you're ready.
The second podcast is always wild. I'm sorry. We just start losing our faculties.
This is the Dope Black Dad podcast. My name is Marvin Harrison, and I am delighted today because we are in the Spotify studios again. They have allowed us to return. We don't know why, but we are not going to complain. Leslie is baking things and making ornaments to send to the head of Spotify to continue our long-term relationship.
Yes. Okay, I will be.
While we are here, I don't know why I just made you very gendered and gave you like a gendered role, like in a kitchen making stuff for men.
I'm going to be in the kitchen helping her.
Okay, that's fine.
I'll be your chef's assistant.
Yeah, I think you can lead. I'll assist you.
Mary, I think you can cancel your friend.
Exactly.
I said I need three.
Oh, yeah. So one
down.
Backup. Two backups.
Yeah.
Yo, do not leave me alone on this microphone. So we are joined here today. And not only are we continued to be joined by Ken and his wonderful wife, Mary, the authors of Financial Joy, we also have with us Leslie. Leslie, how are you? Thank you so much for joining us today.
I am so good. I'm feeling amazing. And I'm using the smooth voice because that's the voice that we all agreed we were going to introduce ourselves with today, right?
Yeah. Leslie, can you tell us your relationship to green?
Oh, right. Okay. Green is my earthly color. It's my color of happiness. And it connects me to nature, which is I'm an earth sign. So that's why green looks good on me. And I wear green a lot.
So every time I see you, I get that feeling, and you out-peacock me every time. And I sit there and think to myself, I need to find more outfits. So next time I'm coming in hard and hot with some sort of multicultural peacocking outfit to take my crown back.
You know, you went from smooth berry wet into my man.
Creepy menacing?
No, nah, not him. Attenborough.
David.
Ooh, it was the breathiness, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Okay.
There are black people in the studio talking. How do we stop it? How do we stop it and end this before they get ideas about reclaiming all of their wealth?
Oh, shit.
Yeah, cool.
We went there.
So Ken and Mary, how are you doing? Thank you for sticking around, actually. We just kidnapped you. You actually have things to do. You have your kids to pick up from school, so now they're just standing outside the school gates because you want to hang out with us. Tell the truth.
This is a good space, man. Yeah. We're loving it.
We're definitely loving it here. You need to do all you can to secure this spot for as many podcasts as possible. Yeah.
What can you make to bribe the head of Spotify? What can you make?
I just bring myself.
Oh, okay. Clearly, this is how Ken got captured, so we understand.
She's a powerful one.
Yeah.
I am here.
Yes.
Darwin, how are you?
I'm really good. Mm. This is really good. And I'm wearing green accidentally. Uh-huh. So I'm matching with Leslie, kind of.
Yeah.
You've got a more repulsant, is that a good word?
What's green? The word?
Do you just mean iridescent?
Flow. Iridescent, that's
thank
it.
You.
Iridescent.
You guys know of your learned words.
Yeah.
We should have never given black people books. It's, what's going on?
It's the glow.
It's glowing.
So Leslie, one of the things that we discovered in the last podcast is that Darwood is open and ready for love, the deepest kind.
I just
1 second though. So what we would like to do is create a possibility, just a space of possibility. If you know of any women who are potentially open to a charismatic, funny, kind, authentic man who they would like to spend the rest of their life with, or at least 45 minutes, please introduce them.
And the 44 of those minutes will be hers.
Oh, I don't know what that means. What does that mean?
So he's saying that he's a listener, a good listener. Mm. Right, you're prioritizing her, right?
Whatever you want, it will be yours.
Okay.
For 44 minutes.
If you feel that Darwood is someone that you could love and add quality to his existence, please email
only
us
for 45 minutes
at hello@dopeblack.org and we will arrange a first date. Preferably somewhere where you're walking in nature, holding hands.
And wearing green.
With no shoes on.
So what I love is that we can do about 12 minutes of this podcast and not actually say anything other than hello. But hello, guys.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
So the producer, and someone who means a lot to me, I don't call her producer full time, but producer, she was going through things online and she found this story. Hmm. And she shared it with me. And you know when like you're busy and someone shares you something on the phone, it has to be good. Otherwise, it's a little bit like we did, you know? But it was good. So this for me sums up pretty much all my dynamics in a form of a relationship. And I'll explain why, but then we'll go into this more. So a woman told her husband to put the soup in the fridge, which is a reasonable request. Mm. Human being A would like help. Please put the food that I made in the fridge so it stays
fresh.
Edible. Fresh is the word. Yeah. And then what happened was the gentleman in question put the entire crock pot and lead and plug in the fridge.
Whoa.
Okay. This is what the internet is calling, okay? This is really important. Passive aggressive laziness. What I love is that everything that happens now on the internet has a psychological, behavioral, therapeutic language to go alongside it. But passive aggressive laziness, where it's like you asked me to do something and technically I did it, but I did it in the most obtuse way humanly possible. Mm. Do you consider this passive aggressive behavior?
Could be poor communication.
That's a man speaking.
I'm just saying, could be.
You know, she asked in a really poor way, so therefore I put it in the fridge in a really poor way. The math is not mathing. But
two men have spoken. Yeah. I haven't spoken yet, but we're going to go to the women in the space.
Yeah, do you know what? I did at first think when you said it the first time, it was a case of, you know, expectations versus reality. There was a breakdown in communication. Mm. But then now, you know, hearing you giving more context about the plug, actually, there was no breakdown in communication. He knew exactly what he needed to do because he obviously has never seen that pot in the fridge before.
With a plug on it.
With a plug. Because I'm not going to lie, I'll raise my hand up to say I've put a pot of food in the fridge before.
Mm, that's normal.
For a brief period until I can like find the time to put in Tupperware. But this sounds like something he's never seen in the fridge. So he knew what to do. Mm. He knew what to do. He was just being lazy.
Leslie.
How about...
When I saw the image of the crock pot in the fridge with the plug and lead and everything else, I think he was somehow having an argument with his partner without having the argument with her. There's some underlying issues going on in that household. Unresolved conversations and some disputes that, it's something deeper.
Do you just think sometimes, yeah, and only this happens in intimate relationships, because if I was visiting your house and you asked me to do that, I would find the energy to do it probably much better based on what I think you would want. Mm-hmm. But in a relationship, I'm just like, if you tell me to do one more thing, one more again, yeah, I'm just going to throw the soup out the window. I just don't even care about the soup. It's soup. Mm. I'll buy soup. I'll buy you 10 liters of soup if you leave me alone. Yeah? So I'm going to explain something. The other day, in my home, and I'm sharing my space with another human being for the first time in a long time, and I'm open, okay, to whatever is needed to make that flow. Okay? Love is important. As someone who is neurodivergent, hyperfocus is a real thing. When it happens, nothing can penetrate. So therefore, if I'm in hyperfocus and I communicate, I'm in a zone. I'm writing slides in my sleep. I'm solving problems left, right, and center. Everything's flowing. It's almost God level. That's wrong. I shouldn't say God.
Why not?
A mutant. What's the X-Men? God. X-Men level.
God's a mutant.
He's a friend of ours. And so I was like, I think she asked me to do something from a loving place. She was already cleaning the space and she asked me to clear a table. It's a reasonable request. And just out of sheer absenteeism, by the time she had finished cleaning pretty much the whole house, I was still in my laptop finishing my emails. This is 20 minutes later. Now, because we love each other, we don't throw things at people. We don't make accusations. We breathe. Okay? She waited 2 days. She waited 2 days. And just on a casual car drive on the way to somewhere, she was like, huh, the other day. And I was like, yeah, what happened the other day? She was like, well, look, I asked you to do something. You said yes. I came back. It wasn't done. And in that time, I now can visualize me typing really furiously, looking up to her, pointing at a table, seeing the table was full, mathing what was required, going back into my zone, and then time blindness just took me into another hour. Now, I know this, okay? She understands I'm ADHD, so she understands. But also, she needs things too. And I feel like in relationships, the request to do things on other people's time is very difficult. And also doing it in the way that they value in their time is even more difficult. So when you add the variables of ADHD, sometimes I just forget. And it's not about anybody. It's not, you're not important. Just time flies and I'm having the best time ever. And then I'll probably go to her and be like, hey, look at the thing I just did. She's like looking at that table that hasn't been done. And I'm like, I just solved the world's problems and helped 30 cancer companies. And like, I realized that this is like a common occurrence, okay, in dynamics. How do you do stuff on people's time? Because in my downtime, you're there. So I don't get a time to be like, I get to recharge and hide. And be by myself and just exist. Because in that time when you see me doing nothing, I may get a request to do something. But then if someone stranger turns up and knocks on the door and they're like, hey, Marv, and I'm like, yo. But 10 minutes ago, I was very frustrated at the fact that you made me get up and do something I didn't want to do. And so the question is, how can you find positivity and love for that person when 10 minutes ago you didn't have positivity and love for me in putting the things away? And so I'm merging about 8 conversations together, but the general gist is, how do you balance a request from a loved one, someone that you want around, that has beautiful eyes, wonderful smile, incredibly kind, someone that will be in your future, whether she likes it or not, love is there. How do you work around what she wants, when she wants it, and still exist in your own space and realm? Anyone?
Well, I'm a very practical person.
Oy,
I'm a Virgo. I just solution-based. So in that scenario, if you're both challenged with time and finding time to have free time to be with each other, then you have to hire in help. So if it's cooking or cleaning, I would throw a solution at that. I would say, okay, hon, let's not have any arguments over these day-to-day chores and tasks, things that we both don't enjoy doing. And let's look at our budget and see if we can hire in the help that comes in once or twice a week to help us manage our time so we get to spend more time together doing stuff we love.
Larry, I love you a little bit more.
Okay. I'm so practical.
That was technically my solution, but we don't want to take... You know, we're not here to point score. You know? We're not here to be right. We're here to just discover. Mary and Ken, how do you do? What happens when you ask him to do something and he's solving people's financial crisis?
Oh, gosh. So I guess it's not really... It's not what you ask, it's about how you ask it. And there are times when, where if there's time constraints and maybe I'm doing dinner, something needs to be done quickly, I might not communicate in the best way. So I've noticed, like, depending on how I communicate or depend on, you know, the response that I get from Ken. But Ken's very hands-on. But he's a bit like you in that he can also be in the zone. I'm thinking, oh, I hope my husband doesn't have this ADHD as well. Like, but,
investigate, it's fun. It's a whole journey.
Yeah, but he can really zone in and get work done, which is needed. It's important. That's why we are where we are in our business, because we have to be consistent and get work done when it needs to get done. So, yeah, I ask him to do some random things around the house and he'll say, yes, babe, I'll do it. He never says no. He'll say, I'll get around to it. And I wait patiently. A bit like your missus, you know, I've probably started to have a bit of anger bubbling underneath the surface. And then Ken will surface from his desk. Babe, I'm done. I want a cuddle. And I'm like, no cuddles, babe. And then he smiles at me and I forget everything. I'm like, okay, then I'll give you a cuddle. But it's just understanding.
And the thing still stays undone, though, after the cuddle.
I've probably done it because I've asked you and you've said, babe, I'll get around to it. And there's deadlines for certain things.
Yeah.
So I've just had to probably do it myself and understand that he's also bringing, he's doing something that's very important.
So
it's about division of labor, really. There's,
So I think that's a really interesting point. And I think we've come from a time where it's been quite problematic in saying that men make money. And we go to work and we do that thing well. And you do the home and family really well. And then we try to get to a place where we split and do more 50-50 on both of those as much as possible. Obviously, we have societal limitations. But what I've realized is that whoever is the best at something, whether you give space or not, they dominate. And I remember with my children's mum, she just dominated in the house. Like, I couldn't get in front of what she wanted to do fast enough. Like, she would just wake up and just go. Like, and I'd be talking to her, she'd be just moving around the house, fixing, cleaning, moving. And I'm just like, can you bring me in? Tag me? I want to be in. And I realized that it's really difficult if you're just naturally good at something to stop and bring the other person up to speed about what your vision is for the space, then work with them at their speed to get to the ultimate solution.
You're just getting in the way, to be fair.
I was trying to be nice about it. But I feel like when I'm doing something like that, it will yield something really big in terms of business or growth or providing an answer. And it's not that she's also a working person also, but in her way, in her own working realm, she does the exact same thing. Like, when she's focused on, like, she did a documentary and she watched every single frame that she shot and was typing up what everybody said and time coding the whole thing, which took her about 3-4 months. Wow. So when she's doing that, there's no point. Whatever my needs are, it's impossible. But I love that about her, but I also just love that about people. Like, have a thing that you're incredibly passionate about outside of your home and outside of your relationship that you can kind of look at them doing it and be like, wow. Because that's the wow that got me there in the first place.
Yeah, right. True.
And so then if you argue with me about cleaning now, I get it, because I like a clean space. I'm not one of those slobby men that can live in squalor. I have needs. Like, I need to be, I've got a touch, be able to touch stuff. My mum would cuss anyway. So I think it's important that I don't know how you find the balance in real time to do those things in a loving way. And I think that's the thing. I think most of the time it feels like an a rejection of somebody's importance that they placed on something. And I don't want to do that. But inherently, I also am in flow. I've never really found an answer of true balance that makes sense and is consistent. It's always kind of hovered around just like, you're not doing enough. Or somebody has to forgo something. I always feel that somebody loses. That's what it feels like. Somebody's losing. They're not actually satisfied with the solution that's created.
I think people hold different spaces. I use Mary and I as an example. At home, I do random things. Like I do the gardening, right? That's just my thing. I just like going out there and standing out there and watering all the plants. And or I might sweep the kitchen floor, right? Because that's just I like clean spaces. So I think different people will always hold different spaces. But when one person makes a request of the other, how you choose to prioritize that matters. So if Mary says to me, this is urgent, like, for example, dry the clothes outside because it's 2 p.m. and the sun's going
to... That's what I always have to like say. A real one. I have to give him context.
Yeah.
Right? So because she gave me that picture, she painted that picture, I'm like, oh, actually, yeah, I get it. Right, I need to go and do it now. I need to stop what I'm doing. Mm. Whereas there's certain things that... It might be like, for example, bring the clothes in. You see, it's the other side of the picture. There isn't really much urgency there. I just carry on doing what I'm doing until she's like about to kick my ass for it. And she's like,
unless she says it's going to rain.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And then she's like, it's going to get all like damp if you don't bring it in. Yeah. Then I get a move on. So I think there needs to be a balance of who's holding what spaces. Mm. And then when you communicate with somebody, how effectively have you communicated? Have you said, well, actually, look, this kind of needs to happen in the next hour? Not like in work talk, but just expressing a level of urgency. So someone goes, actually, I need to deal with this now. Or actually, I have some room. I can wait a little bit.
Is there a way to apply some financial joy to that by taking Leslie's suggestion earlier and delegating it to a dry machine?
Do you know what? It's interesting you say that. So we on Wednesdays, we have
a cleaner
come to our house. Mm. And for a long time, we had this scarcity mindset of, I would do everything myself. Mm. That's a scarcity-driven way of thinking. Yeah. Whereas now, we think, well, actually, like, for example, although I water my garden, somebody else cuts the grass. Like, I actually, and it's our neighbor, he just comes over once every 2 weeks and does it. And I just like just sitting back and having my tea and just watching that happen, right? Because like I value just enjoying that moment and seeing it done excellently. Whereas I could actually get quite lazy. I could go, well, actually, I know I'm meant to cut the grass today, but I've got other things going on. And so looking at money from that perspective of money can bring me joy from this perspective is actually pretty important. Because
absolutely,
like a friend of ours does a thing where we're probably going to do this eventually, where he has a part-time chef, right? It costs about 25 quid an hour. Mm. And they come in, they cook for about 3 hours, and they come in once every 3 to 4 weeks, and they just bulk cook what he likes. He loves Italian food. They just bulk cook it, puts it all into all these
Tupperware, freeze
boxes, freeze them. Mm. And, you know, he's won back a lot of time.
Yeah. Mm.
For quite, you know, not crazy amounts of money, but using the skill of somebody else who is probably looking for some side hustle work or some part-time work. Yeah. And, you know, using their money in a way that brings them joy that way.
Mm. Absolutely. I'm all about like trying to gain as much time and minimize friction in the home by taking away the tasks that we both don't enjoy doing. My partner loves to cook. Like, he's like chief cook in the house, and that works perfectly well because, you know, I'm the person who I don't mind cleaning. I like cleaning. So he go into the kitchen and destroy it. It'll be decimated. I will have to wipe down the cupboards, mop the floor, everything after he's been in there. But, you know, I appreciate his hand. He's got an amazing, he can cook really well. And then I'll go in there and quite happily tidy up. Now,
that sounds like a fair trade.
It's a completely fair trade. I mean, it's something that works perfectly for us. But, you know, traditional roles, like him being, you know, the person who does do the cooking in the home, I worry sometimes that he's like bothered by that, by what other people might think, like, you know, your wife or your partner, your girlfriend should be, you know, the primary person doing that in the household. But it's the reverse in that household, and it's brilliant. Now, what he's really terrible at is like being a tidy person, and I'm incredibly tidy. Mm. So, you know, I do as much as I can. Obviously, I'm working a lot. And when I can't do as much as I want to, we have somebody come in just to top up, a bit like, you know, you said about just finishing off, doing it to that perfect resetting kind of thing. And yeah, it buys us so much time, and it takes away the bickering, the expectations of him doing things that I want him to do, but really he's not going to do it. So
I love that.
It just takes away the bickering. Mm. And more time for joy.
Leslie, because your man isn't present, I think it's easier to ask you this question.
He'd be watching.
In the world that you're trying to create with your partner, how do you describe the division of labor responsibilities? We've obviously come out, we're trying to deconstruct patriarchy in a way which means men just don't do this and women just do this. And in that evolution, but there's never been a clear communication as to what world are we moving into. Because it's not actually matriarchal either. It's kind of like a hybrid of like shared patriarchy. I don't know what actually you would call it. What just individually for you, what world are you trying to create with your partner that's sustainable and healthy?
Well, we have how we've basically worked it out is that, you know, he has his things that he's passionate about. Like, you know, and I'm completely supportive of that. Mm. I have my things that I'm passionate about, and he supports that. When it comes to the home, we divide our labor. I concentrate on the things that I enjoy doing, I don't mind doing, and he does the same. And we just stick to that. It just works. But we're honest. I'm honest up front by being honest about not being able to do everything in the traditional sense. It just allows space for me and for him to identify what our strengths are in the home. And by doing that, we create space. It just creates space for us to do things together and have joy in our relationship. Because there's no underlying bad feeling about, well, you didn't do this, you didn't do that. Well, you know I wouldn't do that. And I know he wouldn't do that. So
there's
a clarity in our roles. And, you know, I think that takes time, but I think it also takes vulnerability and honesty about what you can do and what's expected of you and what you expect of your partner. And that's a conversation that might take a few months. It may take a few years to get into the groove where that works for you. But if you've got the love for the person and you really see yourself in the future with them, you'll work on it. Because, you know, the bickering, it will just kill the vibe and kill the relationship so quickly.
Dawood, you've been out of the game, the long-term game, for a second.
Yeah.
We're going to reestablish your future love soon.
It's coming.
As we're presenting these potential three women that you're going to whittle down to one.
Hey, you never know.
Unless you have consent for an alternative arrangement. There you go. Then what would that even begin to look like for you? Well, who would make it past the threshold into the door and be invited to take a seat?
When it comes, I will know. I don't know how to articulate it. When Leslie was actually speaking, I started remembering some of the things I used to hate when I was actually living with someone. And it was weird stuff like not opening the fridge but with the handle, opening it with the door, or
when she did that,
yeah,
okay,
like it used to just drive me nuts. Like, just open the bloody
use the handle.
But then the worst actually one is, you know, cereal boxes or any box, just not opening them properly, and so you can't close them back.
Yeah,
that used to drive me mad. And then the inside, the thing just. Open it,
jagga jagga.
You know what I'm saying? You used to drive me like, seriously, just open it carefully so we can close it back nice and neat.
And maintain the freshness.
Freshness.
Yeah. And I have that about biscuits because I love biscuits. So when people leave biscuits open overnight and they go soft, that's one of the most violent experiences, because now it's in my mouth.
How do you get past that without, like, literally, I would go from zero to volcano in a second. Like, there was just no reasoning with me, because I'd be like, how many times do I have to
tell you? But what does it mean to you, though, genuinely?
You just set me off.
Maybe it gives him peace. Maybe he has a lot of peace.
It feels like it's. What I always learn is, yeah, when those things take you from 0 to 100, it has an inherent meaning.
It probably does.
Connecting to, like, usually something childhood related.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where it's like, it either means something around, like, someone doesn't care about the things, either the food that you have or the things that you have, or you make it directly just about you. They don't care about you, so they don't respect that you need those things.
Was that, because I knew the love and respect was there. It still is, even though we're no longer together. So that was never a question. And I probably should investigate why it used to drive me mad. But it was the driving mad was she would laugh. Because it was so irrational. And my irrational anger, like, I'm probably laughing through it as well. I know I'm not being taken seriously, but it used to drive me mad. I didn't know how to articulate it well enough. Like, please, can you stop doing this? And I didn't know how to do it.
But you know what? Sometimes I think, because I have those things. I have things about not, like, seeing me. And I never forget, there was this one story. I was in a relationship, and I think I was hungry. So I ordered food. No, I came home, and the food that was made was for children. It was like a children's meal. But you know those, like, after work, you're getting 2 sausages and some veg. And I was like, I ain't eating that, but I get what happened. Cool. So that ordered food in. And then when the food came, the kids were like, yay! Because obviously I ordered tasty stuff. So they're like excited. And now they're having their second dinner. And I'm like, okay, cool. And then I go to share it up. I get up to go and get something to share it all up. And I come back and it had all been divvied out, including my share. Yeah. So this is like a minute and a half, by the way. And I just lost it. Like, I couldn't find the language. And this is why therapy was so good. But I couldn't find the language to explain the importance of, like, I had made a provision for myself after no provision was made. And somehow the provision that I had made had still taken been away. Divided and taken away to give to our children, by the way, which is obviously, they can eat whatever they want. But I was just like, the inconvenience of coming home and being hungry and still being like, oh, it's okay, I'll find an answer. And then, like, and this came up later on as a thing of just like, I understand that that's a thing for you. It's a thing for me. Like, if you overlook me in my inner circle and you just blatantly just like take something from mine and just start eating it, I'm like, I beg your pardon. And so I know that somewhere in my childhood, not being seen impacted me.
Yeah.
To the point that I protect being seen by the people that I love. Like, I don't even mean like I'm here. I mean just like I'm here. like I don't finish off all the food in the pot and don't think about what Marvin may need, or don't finish the things that I use, and don't destroy things that I care about. Like, you know, if my the batteries got taken out of a remote for something that I only use, I think it was my Oculus or something. And I was just like, but I use this every day. And you've just taken the batteries out to put in a remote control car. And so if you text, no, but you know what I mean? It's just like, I get it. We're serving our children. But if you call me and be like, oh, we need more batteries, it really is not a problem.
I get this.
But when you get home and you're just about to use the thing and you're just like, yo.
Exactly.
Go on, Ken. I feel like you have to say something.
No, because this is one that really hits for me. It's the remote thing, because... You know, like when you've had a really long day and you're like, you know what, I'm going to treat myself to an hour of a show. And then you're like, okay, where's the remote control? Then
where is it? Let alone it? Remote.
Like, I actually just expect the remote to be where I left it. Like, well, where is it? Someone's taken it and it's gone somewhere. And then you find it, the back of the remote's gone, and maybe one battery's disappeared. And then you're like... No. Come on, you know, like, so in that sense, I feel like, aren't you guys understanding that I sometimes just need this space just for me? Like, I just need, or I come in and it's like just all the cushions in the living room are all over the floor, the coffee table, like, they just toss stuff everywhere. And I like clean spaces. I like to come in, I kind of feel like my space is inviting. I want to just, I feel like it's my calm space. And I'm like, don't you know this is a living room?
Yeah! It's a living!
Listen, there's some serious pet peeves that happen in couples. Yeah. Like, I always watch people look for their keys and stuff, and I'm like, are you insane? And that, like, I know, I can remember where this started from. And that, yeah, my bedroom when I was a kid was a bomb site, right. Literally. But I knew where everything was. Every now and then, my mum would get so frustrated and then clean it for me. And as soon as she did that, like, I couldn't find anything. Mm. And I would have a nervous breakdown.
Wow.
And whatnot. But not only that, if I did misplace something, looking for it, I would have a nervous breakdown. Like, literally, the world's ended. This is me as a kid. Wow. Like, screaming and, like, having tantrums. But I'm, like, 14, 15.
Mm.
And then one day I had one. And I goes, yeah, you started to bring girls back here. Like, you can't have this mess. So I had to start tidying up so girls can come here. But then the tantrums, because this tantrum happened in front of a girl.
Mm.
Literally, I couldn't find
a girl or
keys.
A woman? What age is this?
14, 15.
Ah, okay, cool.
And whatnot. Like, I was still a virgin, like, nothing that, but it just happened in front of her, and I was like, yeah, I'm never losing my virginity. So then I devised them a method where, cool, if I put my key in the same place every single time as a habit, I will never have to look for them. And then also, I'm allowed to have two places that I can do that in. So I know that. I know exactly where it is.
A or B. Do you feel like you just answered your question as to why the cereal box being untidy is a massive problem for you?
Maybe I've not even looked at it like that.
I genuinely, and again, because some of these stories sound wild on their own, I've had this understanding of, like, how it manifests in my adulthood is always going to sound wild. And I can obviously make it sound kinder by being like, it connects to my childhood. But I've had to realize it's my responsibility to not have that reaction to things. And the way that I have to do that is boundaries. So it's not about just, because I think sometimes people talk about doing the work as if, like, therapy is a magic button to answers of your deepest pain. Yeah. And it's not. It's a way of working. And the way me and my therapist talk about it is, I say as if we're a team. The way that my therapist talks to me about it is, it's about expanding the amount of time something can happen before it gets to that threshold.
Okay.
And so it's not just like it never happens. It may not happen on the third. It may happen on the fifth. And that's an improvement. And if you still build on that and practice, it will get more and more times before you react. But I also feel like it's a very good understanding of just, like, in not allowing everybody into a space where that can occur constantly. And again, so me not having boundaries meant it was just like, hey, everyone come and take everything. And then when it was like, oh, I need this one thing for myself and I had to give it up, of course I didn't feel good. But I gave away too much. So if I have 100, I can say I have 50. Come and take 50 of these things, and handed them out, and I kept 50 for myself. I still have an abundance, but also I've given out some. Whereas I'll just give out 99 and be like, whoa.
What's happening here?
Yeah. And I think in that imbalance, and I think the last thing that I found out is that I wasn't recharging. I wasn't replenishing myself, and I wasn't loving on myself. So then I think if you're like, even for things like that, if you're stretched in other ways and other things are going on, that does become super important. But if you've just woken up and you see certain things, you're just like, it's like, the cereal box, fine, I'll do it later. You just have capacity. So rest and, like, loving on myself.
How do you communicate that to someone you're living with?
So we actually have weekly meetings, which just sounds bizarre. But I like concepts in relationships. I don't like living in just, like, hopefully I'll love you and hopefully I'll love you next week. We have, like, we implemented this thing, idea of weekly meetings. So on a Sunday, it's a reconciliation day. Like, how do you feel I've loved you this week? How do you feel like I've missed anything? Is there anything next week? Or what's your vision for your day is a really good question to ask in the beginning of the day. Those little things create capacity and understanding when you don't know what's going on. And I think for me, any healthy relationship that I can ever come across, there's some version of those tools in place to just open up the door for conversation.
I wrote one for that couple.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what we do is every night we have dinner together And we sit around the table, never on our laps, never in front of the TV, no distractions. And we just talk about how our day has been. Mm. What's your day going to be looking like tomorrow? What was good about today?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
What things, you know what I mean? You just check in, keep on checking in. You're seeing in your herds,
and you know, during these things, can you speak about what the other person is doing to affect you?
Yeah, you can bring those things up for sure. Because by that time, it hasn't built up over a month or 2 months or 3 months, it's daily. Mm. You literally have to be practical about these things sometimes, and they just become the norm. And then you realize that it minimizes the triggering. Because, you know, the next day at dinner, it's going to come up again. Mm. It's going to get dealt with. There's not going to be a lot of time in between where things don't get discussed.
It's interesting, talk about relationships, that we read some astonishing stats yesterday around financial infidelity.
Mm. Mm. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So
a lot of couples, because they don't really communicate, and don't have certain things in place, like we've just been talking about, don't know that their partner is, for example, in a lot of debt. So I had an example not too long ago of someone who said their partner had built up maxed out six credit cards.
Wow.
And they didn't know about it.
Wow.
So it's like, that then raises crazy questions like, well, wait, what?
Is this a relationship or a marriage?
Oh, this is a marriage. Yeah, oh, wow. Yeah, okay. This is a marriage with children. With children, yeah. Oh, no. And so because of poor communication and other things, couples don't know things about their partner. Like some of the stats even showed that some couples don't know that their partner has a piece of a house, has some ownership in another property, for example, or that they impulse buy, or that, you know, because they haven't created a space to just talk about some underlying issues, some kind of root cause issues that exist in their relationship. So one thing we do, we have a money day. So the money day is a space for us to just, first of all, understand where we're at. So what's going on? Are we aligned as a couple on what we see as our vision and what we're working towards? But it's also to look at micro things like, for example, are we like, what's been going on with our finances? Are we overspending in some areas? Are we not? And also to get a picture, just to look at what's happening with our assets, our liabilities. Are we progressing? Do we have a full picture? Like, do we know all the debts that exist? Do we know all the assets that we own and stuff like that? Even things like, start to think about parenting your parents. Did you know at some point, you've got to actually parent your parents? You know, like when you start to think about legacy and, oh, wow, you know, has dad written a will?
Is it normal that a 22-year-old is doing it to me?
Have you spoken to your mum and dad about X, Y, and Z? So if you don't have that space where you come together and start to have those conversations, then there'll be so many unknowns that exist in the background.
How often do you guys do?
Typically once a week. typically. But
yeah, it used to be religiously once a week, but we're not so religious about doing it once a week now.
Because there's flow and just an understanding.
Things have been sorted out, I guess.
Yeah, things just get sorted out. And we always have, like, we check in now and again every day in our conversations. But fortnightly, definitely it happens more so now than when we started out.
And is it only the money you guys speak about?
No,
or does the other things?
No, not at all. So I particularly love the joy parts of it. So we're talking about our long-term goals. What's our joint visions? What's our separate goals? How are we making that happen? How are we setting aside money for those long-term goals? And so it's just a great time for partners to actually come together, because a lot of the time we're so busy living our lives and we're all chasing our own individual goals. But, you know, what are we doing together jointly? How are we supporting each other on those goals? So,
Because people like this whole adage, business never personal. But because you are having a money day, although you've added the joy parts of it, do you bring the personal stuff of your marriage in on that day and discuss that as well on that day?
So our personal stuff we discuss pretty much every day, because Mary and I work together and we enjoy each other's company. We go for walks, and during those long walks, we just talk about stuff. We just catch up. So I'd say the personal things like that are happening every day, but from a financial perspective, money just has its own space for us to. And I also find someone has to have responsibility for it. So we've got this concept of the home CFO. So you need somebody who needs to be responsible for money in a household. Because money is, wealth building is like doing admin. And admin needs to be done by somebody. And somebody needs responsibility over it. Like, for example, have you completed this form and sent it out? Have you paid that penalty notice? Which, you know, a lot of people don't like dealing with. And there's always a cost to delay to doing things. So I think in a relationship, there needs to be someone who says, actually, do you know what? I know we're going to meet on Friday or Sunday or whenever, but I'll just prepare like a little mini agenda for us to talk about or a little thing for us to consider. That way, you know, the conversation actually happens in a fruitful way and both people know like who's doing what and they're able to walk away with, okay, here's what we talked about. Maybe next week when we meet, we'll kind of like catch up on some of those points we talked about.
Love that.
Yeah.
So practical.
I know.
I'm into practical moves.
It's weird because you almost create a box to have fun in. And it's almost like you have to build the box though. And most people just go have fun and play around and then they realize, like I think one of my bigger fears is getting into that. I specifically feel like black men around 50 to 60 start dying. And most of them die alone.
Wow.
And that's a fear for me. Like, and it's not even really about the alone part. I just feel like what a waste of life.
But you have children.
No, but like, I don't think, I invested my children enough to believe that I will have a relationship with them. But you also can't guarantee it. It may not even be like they don't with you. It could be just, I'm at uni, Dad, or I'm living abroad now.
And
it could be, it could be genuine things for them. And I don't want them to be like, but come back and visit me every Sunday so I have friends and people to be around. But I think dying alone and the amount of men who die without anyone coming to visit them or without their partner's care, because they didn't look after their partners in those key years, they didn't invest time. That for me is a massive thing of just like, what a sad way to go. And I think it's really important that like we invest in those relationships and we don't get stuck up on washing the dishes and, you know, those types of things. Because if that's the reason why someone feels that you don't care about them, it's genuinely a thing to look at for yourself if your goal is, I don't want to be alone. Because you can't keep reinventing yourself with 30-year-olds every like year and be like, oh, it'd be fine, I'll find somebody else. It's like there'll become a point where, yo, your body functions aren't working. You need to be with someone that can identify a stroke from a distance or something.
Absolutely.
Hey. Wow. So I do think that's important. And I think fear is quite a strong word, but I do think it's a element of awareness that I have. And also just like financially being hyper independent on my own. Like I think I told you when by the way, I'm in the book. We didn't talk about it.
Oh yes, exactly. Oh, you are in the book.
I made the shortlist.
Yes, you are.
But I think another thing is it's just like ensuring that I'm still aggressively planning for my later years on my own terms.
Yes.
Because who knows where I will be, but what makes that loneliness worse is if you don't even have money either.
Money.
So having no money and being alone puts you in a position where you're just super vulnerable to any and everything. And it's like, it's different if you're like 60, feeling a bit alone and be like, I'm going to go to Jamaica.
Yeah.
Just like, you know, I'm going to buy a house and live in the mountains and live a humble life, but I can choose and have some agency as to what my future is. So important. I think that's important.
Do you know what? Can I give you a real case study real quick? So we had someone messaged us. She said, I'm 59 years old. I've been forced to early retire because I can't get a job. Yeah, no one wants to hire me, she says. And I'm now having to rely on my private pension, which isn't very much. And at the same time, I'm noticing a trend amongst other women facing the same problems.
Because they raise children instead of putting their money in their pension.
Yeah, and all kinds of things that have had to happen. And then there's also the unspoken elements of, as you get older, your wealth building potential doesn't carry on going up into the sky, right? There is something that happens, right? And for some of us, if we're not adequately prepared, there is a challenge there, you know, and that then starts to create other outcomes. And then parallel to that, you're then looking, there's a show on Netflix called Live to 100. Have you seen it?
I was just about to mention that,
So these centenarians, people who live over the age of 100, I looked at some research in the UK that says that there are around 14,000 centenarians in the UK. And that's been growing rapidly over time since the last census in 2011. So if we're all on average living longer, right, and expect to live longer, and if we're all with much more data looking after our health and well-being and so on, money plays an even bigger role. Absolutely. Because you would need resources to be around for longer, you know, to be able to maintain, but money doesn't play the exclusive role. Relationships plays an even bigger role. Because in that piece of research they did, they interviewed these people in Okinawa and in Japan,
Canada,
in Greece and different parts. And what were some of the things they found?
So they found that there were five parts of the world that had the most cluster of centenarians, so people who lived up to 100 and beyond. And they found like there was 9 common lifestyle traits that were common amongst all of those parts of the country, countries where you had the most centenarians. And some of them were like plant-based, plants on. So they ate 90% plant-based food. They also ate 80% full. So they didn't eat to the point they were bloated. They actually left space for the food to digest. And they had their heaviest meal in the early afternoon and their lightest meal in the evening. They walked a lot, they in nature. And some of the conveniences that we have now, it's actually ironic that those are the things that are now making us unhealthy, like the cars. We're just finding shortcuts and we're not being as active as we should be.
They did lots of physical exercise, able to like sit down on the floor and get back up without like holding onto a chair.
In their 90s.
You know, and they're in their 90s. But the one that really stood out to me was the relationships.
Which is what you were touching on.
Yeah, which is what you were saying, is that they'd maintained long-term relationships of people who are actually intentionally in their lives day to day.
That challenge that Marvin gave you and Mary and Leslie to find me a woman, please.
We want to live to 100, right?
You know, those people that live to 100, they had a proper network. They had a community and they had purpose. Something that you speak about,
Ikigai.
They had a purpose.
What's Ikigai? Ikigai.
It's a Japanese word for finding your purpose.
But the most thing was, you know, the community. So their children, they looked after their children so well that their children would then look after them when they're older. But even if they didn't have children, their partners, you know, the wives, the husbands, they stuck to each other because they had nurtured those relationships. And, you know, they also had a community, like whether it was a church, so Seventh Day Adventist, they had something that they all had common goals and values that they... You know,
and Seventh Day Adventists are also plant-based people.
Plant-based.
So I knew that they live longer.
I often think that the point about the children, looking after your children and your partner, there is a conflict there because often in our quest for money and a quest for success,
we sacrifice those things.
Yeah. You know, and time passes. Next thing you're like, oh, it's my 50th. Oh, it's my sixth. You know, we're all getting older, but then it's becoming too late to actually prioritize those loved ones, really like genuinely make it a part of your internal culture to sow into fruitful relationships. So I think there's a reflective point there around like what's really important to us, you know, like what brings us joy. Yes, okay, you know, earnings very important, but what other investments do we need to be making to better
in people?
In people, yeah, exactly. People, yeah.
So I think one of my when Dope Black was like at its peak, and it was kind of still infancy, but in its peak, the one thing that I was really obsessive about was this idea of an intentional community. And I used to think about it all the time for those reasons. Because inherently, most of the time when we get tripped up is because we're trying to overwork and we're under-resourced and our children suffer as a result, just time-wise. We don't get the time with them. And I think back to like the Black community historically, and like, you know, if I saw your children, I'd slap them by the back of the head and we'd go home. And if I saw them throwing stones or something, I could talk to them. And it meant that there was a collective responsibility for everybody that was Black in that area at the time. Also, it's like when you go back to a Caribbean country, and you probably know this, if you say your last name, it has a meaning. So if I went back to Antigua and I said, well, on one side it's the Nibs and the other side it's the Brooks. Oh, we know the Nibs. The Nibs they used to do this.
Like upstanding family in the community.
They'll tell you exactly what they did, who they were, what job they had. And then I got invited to the tourism, head of tourism. He's an MP, but I went to go sit down with him. And he was like, so what's your father's name or your grandfather's name? And I told him, he was like, oh, yeah. And he just picked up his phone, picked it up. And he was like, yeah, where's the family there? Where are they? And then he was like, oh, well, they moved. No, because I used to be in the police office. So he hung up, picks up the police office. Oh, is he still working there? Yeah, he's still working. He's not there now. All right, cool. He just hangs up again. So basically, I could have spoke to my great uncle just in that moment, because it's that simple to be like, yeah, I'll trace you. I know where your people are. And there's a couple of things that does, which we don't have here. As a visitor in this country, we just don't have those ties. And I think it leaves us slightly aimless. So listening to you two is great, because I think you found an anchor through finance that structures you and gives you a clear place of where you need to be and what you need to be doing. I think for many other people who were never going to be earning, I'm not saying that's the only reason you can make surplus, but they were never going to be earning six figures as a household. They are public servants. They work at a level which means they have enough to survive. But those people deserve a form of security and anchoring also. And I think that's what community does. But trying to create a community against the elements of the country, I find incredibly difficult. Because the second, like, I might be okay, but then to make sure 5, 6, 7, 8 people are okay, we genuinely have to find a new revolutionary model of how we coexist. Because if somebody else out there is like challenged because COVID and 8 people lose your job in your community, that's a massive fracture. It's so expensive to exist here. So if anyone comes up with an answer how to do that in a fair and equitable way, because my last point is every time these communities are led by men, something goes wrong.
Right.
The SWAT team have to come and get them. Someone's having children with fudging other children. It's a whole... I don't know if you've seen the documentaries on Netflix. There's one about, is it Waco or one of those? Right. And the guy was like getting guns and he was creating this army and he believed that they were coming to get them. And because he was so aggressive, they actually came and got him. And then about half of them, most of them died. And you're just like, this would never happen if it was led by women. It would just never happen. So I think it has to be a matriarch community. That's the one thing I know for it to work. But the financial rules, the like how we build it, I think is all open, but I think it's the only real answer for a collective of Black people to sustain themselves.
Can I give you one answer?
Yeah, go for it.
So I think, in about an hour and a half, I've got to go meet my sisters, right, both of them. And one thing my parents had instilled into us is the importance of unity. So I'm in a situation where my sisters are quarreling right now. And I have been brought up with this idea of uniting us no matter what. So I've booked lunch. We're having that lunch, and that lunch is a unity lunch. It's a lunch for us to put all the cards on the table, hug, make up, and start supporting each other and our children. Now, I think this is very important, because I think from a communal perspective, that unity needs to begin at home. Mm. We have to be able to find togetherness in our own vicinity at home. Because if you can't show it to your people around you, how on earth are you going to show it to people you've met or strangers? Mm. You know, so there's that practical aspect. Then there's the mindset aspect. So, for example, we have a culture of hoarding knowledge, right? Which is, you know stuff, but you don't want to tell people. You're like, because your scarcity way of thinking is making you kind of think there's only one pie in the world. And if someone takes a bit of that pie, they're taking it away from you rather than, you know. So I think there's a practical element of trying to create unity starting from our immediate spaces. Then there's a mindset element of actually, do you know what? Me helping you doesn't take anything away from me.
Mm.
So I think it's that combination of beginning with what you've got already, but also trying to help us to think differently, you know, in the us helping each other. It's not like it doesn't cost us to do that. It actually moves us all forward.
How do you make that look attractive though? Because, you know, we all kind of, we all know that message, but I think having something set in an intentional goal. So we're helping each other. We're creating a community because we're going to gain this. So we're going to build a retirement village in the Caribbean. We're going to, I'm going to build one in Barbados. You know, there's going to be one in Antigua and, you know, maybe one in Nigeria that we can all communicate with each other, travel, make a lifestyle that's something that we can look forward to. If we put this time and energy into something, then we're going to gain.
It's a vision.
The vision.
Yeah.
And I think having it not led by something makes it a bit difficult and easy to drop out.
Yes.
The other thing that I think is really important is you have to kind of keep it under the radar.
Why?
I don't feel like, so I think in our community, so it's really interesting. I had a conversation with someone and she's quite a divisive figure in our community. And when I was talking to her, she was just like, the reason why I'm so harsh to other black people is because I spend a significant amount of time outside of our community and I see how they move. And the things that we're thinking about and worried about and protesting for are a complete waste of time. It's just like, it's just a complete waste of time because the answer is economic power and being and also being organized. So she says if she goes to like a council meeting in any borough, there are no black people there. All these other communities are in there talking about where they put parking restrictions and planning laws and handing out licenses to things. And they're buying up all these different territories. And she told the story of there was a councillor, she went to one of those meetings and someone who attended was talking about the Orthodox Jewish community in Stamford Hill and how some of them are moving because they actually don't have abundance of money, very much opposite to what very anti-Semitic thoughts are. They don't have lots of money. They don't have abundance. So now that they're realizing that everything around them is going up in price, but there's some value in their house, they're selling up and they're moving to a seaside town. So they've been quietly just buying up a street. And they put some businesses in there, some shops in there, and they're buying up the houses on the road and they plan to move at a for unforeseen date. None of this is publicized anywhere. There's not a YouTube account that's like blow by blow strategizing what the community are doing. They're just doing it. So I think when you start to announce it, you get people who aren't particularly serious showing up and being like, also, people who aren't from your community that have not got your best interest in heart start blocking you. And it's like all of a sudden you manifest a distraction rather than a genuine goal. So if I was to ever create something again, it would never be known.
So are you experiencing this kind of with Dope Black Dads?
It's not really Dope Black Dads. I think just when, and there's many other variables, so it's not really about that. But like I realized that as we started shouting about it, it lost its focus. When it was just us doing what we were doing, and you know, because you were there from day one, the conversations, I think I cried three times in like a week from the things that men were saying. Like it woke me up because I've always lived very individual. I don't, I've never really lived in life with lots of people before. So my whole up until 35, I was just living, working, doing what I had to do. That's the first time I sat and listened to men properly. And it shook me. I was like, wow. So and the thing is, I was in my own feelings, but I was like, I've got to do something. So that's how all of that happened. That whole period of time was me responding to what I was processing for the first time. And I just think that there was no plans to make it more. Because if it was, it would have just
probably happen, but it was just to exist. Mm. Be there, say the things we needed to say, represent men in a much better way, have really genuine conversations with us and where we're not as good as we want to be and where we are working and we're not being heard. All those things mattered. But if I was going to create a genuine economic movement, I would never, ever talk about it.
Yeah. I hear that. But talking about Dope Black Dads, I have to say you've created like a dope community. No pun intended. Like, it's really good. And anytime Ken says he's going to something that you're organising, I'm like, yeah, babe, go to it. Yeah. He always comes back feeling, you know, he's buzzing.
Yeah.
Like replenished, refreshed. And I appreciate it.
I think it's an interesting point you make about revealing what you're doing. There's a great talk by Derek Sivers. It's a TED talk.
Mm.
On why you shouldn't share your goals with other people.
Wow.
It's very short TED talk, but it's very powerful because psychologically, when you tell people your goal, there's a reaction. People are like, yeah, there's a lot of buzz. And the research actually shows that most people don't then take the steps to do what they said they were going to do because they had announced it and gotten the validation. It was like all the hype.
Wow.
And so they're less likely to actually then take the steps to do it. When in actual fact, if you do want to tell people, the research is saying that you should mention it, but without asking for the validation.
Mm.
You know, there's a way you can still communicate that, but you're much better off actually keeping it and then maybe sharing once you've done something rather than saying, here are my intentions and here's what I think I'm going to do. Mm. So it's not just observing it from those communities, there's a psychology around that. Mm. That actually means that people are actually getting things done rather than not getting things done.
I also just genuinely feel like there's an element of fear. Mm. Like when someone says, we're going to do something for Black people, either it's like you're one of the rare people who can and will do something. And there's so much need in our community that if someone says, I'm going to help economic empowerment, you will see it in a complete overwhelming demand on that very short resource. Mm. And that makes it difficult. And if you don't have abundance resource yourself to create a structure and a barrier to be able to like provide it consistently, like if you haven't got a machine, it will deplete inherently.
Yes.
And so I think it's really important if we ever were to offline have this conversation about how do we do something dope. For me, I almost would build it like a company would build
it.
This is why Beloved even was created. But the whole point of it was like, rather than sit there and be on the front lines saying what we want, we just became a structure. And the structure had a very clear operational model.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a service.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a, we're here to help. It's just, you want something, it goes in here, and then it comes out here with
systemized, 100%. Yeah.
It's not emotional. It's not personal. It's not good or bad. It just is. And we just deliver outcomes through that process.
Yes.
What I want to do is take that process and apply it to other things that aren't just about turning over revenue or products and services in that way, but answers like, let's have a global retirement home project. But the way I would do it is not to be like, hey guys, let's all come around my house for tea and let's talk about a retirement project. I would go away, get planning, get a site. Someone would build me a 3D model.
Yep.
Someone would do me the design.
There's an investment arm to it.
It's just clear what you're paying in. This is the buying price.
Mm.
And then just whoever shows up, shows up. Because I think the other part of selling the idea at the beginning, again, you just get pulled into multiple different versions of what it could be. And why don't we do one in Trinidad first? And then before you know it, you're not actually doing anything. So there's a bit of that part as well as the, once you say it to yourself, you might just think, I did it. You haven't done anything. Mm. Leslie.
Yes.
Have you been a part of, I feel like some reason you've been a part of some sort of financial movement, like a partner times 10 or something. Have you been a part of any of these Black empowerment movements before?
Well, actually, no. But what I've been around are people who from maybe about 10, 15 years ago were brave enough and had the courage to embark in a property investment strategy that I completely understood and joined in and got in my mid-20s, which really afforded me financial freedom by the time I was 35.
Wow.
So, amazing. You know, being around people who you really see and understand their vision and just having the courage to step outside the societal norms and also, you know, thank God they shared that information with me.
Mm.
Yeah. But clearly, they understood that I would understand what was needed, and they clearly knew that I wasn't going to be wasting their time because I came at a point of desperation. I needed to do something else. Corporate life didn't suit me very well. You know, even the commute here today reminded me, triggered me. I was like, Lord have mercy. This tube. So I knew, you know, from a very young age that having a plan and having a vision, executing is absolutely imperative, and having systems and being disciplined. But the vision is the most important thing. So, you know, I'm a very vision-led person. Like my vision and my is sometimes not understood, but you know your vision. You have your trust and belief in yourself. You go for it.
I'd love everyone to end on just what is your vision for your later years? Like, how do you see your time, and what kind of people are around? Where are you in the world? Like, what does it look and feel like? We'll start with Mary.
So I picture myself in a nice hot country. And our children are, they're grown now. They're probably at uni, or they finish and they've got their own families. And we're in a position where they can drop their children off for the weekend or the week or whatever, because they want to go on holidays, you know, just the partners, husband and wife. And yeah, we've got the room to have our grandchildren, and we've got the time to be intentional with them, take them to the beach, you know, whatever. And yeah, it's just Ken and I go for daily walks. We exercise, we eat healthy, probably have a chef, but there's that peace that we have in our environment with our children. We're not a burden to them and they're not a burden to us, because we've set them up financially with not just the resources, but also the opportunities for them to create that life for themselves financially. Yeah.
Powerful.
Bit of a waffle.
Wow. I'd say mine is... I see a later life where we're moving around the world. We're just literally, we already own a home that's fully paid, mortgage free. We'll lock it up, and we've got other investments. We're able to like just go around the world and go where we want to actually learn and experience local culture, not just in all inclusive like spaces, but actually, and nothing wrong with that, by the way, just a different way of looking at having an experience, but actually going in and trying to experience things, but in different parts of the world, but doing it with people. I want to be able to move around with people as well, because I just feel like I've never had a guy's holiday, for example. Never been on one. Yeah. I don't know what that feels like.
We're taking
like.
You to South Africa, by the way. Well, that's
big, the whole thing. Do you know what? I'm going to come. I've never had one. You know, so I want to feel that. I want to just like have spaces where like we come out, we're sitting around in an evening, there's wood fire burning, and everyone's sitting around having drinks and chatting and connecting. Like, I think that's a really beautiful vision. And like you say, our children are fully financially independent, and they are kind, compassionate people who look at the world in a very different way and are solutions driven, and we're able to connect with them really well, and they connect with us. And so that for me is the vision I see. It's how I'd like life to kind of pan out.
Powerful. Right. What about you, Leslie?
Mine's really simple. Mine's a statement. Like, I want to have an experience-based lifestyle until I die. So... a bit like your experience, experiencing different cultures and countries and people and cuisines and foods and activities globally, right? So I'm already on that journey, but I want to continue until I die, literally. But, you know, if you want to come snowboarding in Japan in March, come to Japan. That's where I'm going to be. I'm a part of a group called the Nubian Ski. And we've been going for 22 years.
Okay. Do you know what? Is that in the UK? Is that...
Yeah, UK based.
Right. Beginners
can we?
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
We need to find out how to join.
I'm into pursuing activities that aren't necessarily, or you know, associated with 51-year-old black women, right? So diving, bungee jumping, if you're into anything that's adventure-based or a little bit extreme, I think give it a go. Have some courage. Have some fun, but also back it up with some investments, you know? So get that start. Get that part of your life sorted out first. And then let that feed and fuel your passions.
Listen, we're joining you with those experiences.
Oh, yeah.
Come. What about you, David?
It's funny because I feel like I've been ticking off so many things that of who I want to be when I'm an old man. And the one thing I've not invested in is the financial side of things. Mm-hmm. But in terms of health, like I'm a gym rat. I love going to the gym and whatnot. I eat well. I try to keep my mind right. I try to stay spiritually. So my vision of me as an old man is just fit, healthy, and whatnot. So being able to get off the floor without needing a chair, without groaning. I've said this on a previous podcast. The groaning starts in your 20s. It doesn't start when you're old. Like you start getting up and creaking and groaning and whatnot. And after a while, your mind just automatically, when you go to do certain things, you do that. So the physical side of things, I've always tried to be on top of. The mental side of things, I've always tried to be on top of. And that as long as I'm fit, healthy, and my sons can come and we burn a chalice, we play chess, that's my idea.
Amazing.
I've always known that I'm not going to be an old man in this country. I don't think the cold is great for old bones and whatnot. So I'd like love to do the summer here, get refreshed, because I love London. I do. But the winter months, top down in the winter, that's what winners do, as Mr. Sean JZ said. So yeah, that's my idea of being older. But I do need to, after today's thing, I've realized that I've left a big, massive hole. I need to start filling in.
It's never too late.
Never too late. Exactly.
Look, thank you all for being here.
Did you say yours?
Oh, sorry. That's a common habit as well. Mine, I think definitely warm. I think I'll be in South Africa. I think I'll be just outside Cape Town. They have beautiful landscapes there. I found the most peace I've ever had in my whole life there, so I see that as a more of a spiritual home. And they have, obviously, by the water, you have Indian Ocean, Atlantic Ocean. I would love to have an excessive piece of land with other homes on it, with people that I love in distance. Like I've seen this like model of a, like a circle where everyone's back garden is centered into like this one communal space. And it just looked really like peaceful, because you can go out the door and be by yourself, or go backwards and run into your people and use that communal space for like the kids and, you know, for shared and communal living. And I thought that was a really beautiful way to exist.
That's nice.
And I think my whole thing is like people over things.
Yeah.
So experiences top, but then I'd rather have like people around and just laugh and be whatever. This is why I host at my house all the time, is that's really joyous to me. And then the rest of it, I don't think so. I think, as Ken identified, my whole vision is very experience led, and it needs to be have a bit more financial notes in. So I think I'm going to take the conscious note to do that and be very specific. But that's pretty much it, man. Like, I definitely want to be in love. Like, I don't even really mean romantic love. I want to have someone that I look at and admire, and just like enjoy seeing them existing, and it has a deeper meaning for me. Like, I think I have a couple of female friends specifically where I have great friendships with them, and I just enjoy them in whatever it is that they're doing, and any version of them. And I'm really honored to have them in my life. And I think the men in my life, the one thing that I'm asking the men in my life, I think Dar was probably the only one who lives like this, is like, there's an element of freedom. I think we're still in our heads as men. Like, we still have a thing that we're trying to do, and we're trying to tackle something and achieve something and break something down. And we don't use our inner child enough. We don't relax enough. So I'm trying to keep that balance. Like, I want to be fun, joy, and all of those things. But I protect and provide anyway. Like, I almost don't even have to say that out loud, because it's just been happening for so long. But if I don't tuck in my joy and my rest, like, I think it kills all of the possibilities of this other thing. So that's a really important thing. And that's why I do intentional men work now, is I want to poke them and be like, you're not doing the things, like you're doing what the society has told you and you're not happy. So that's a really important thing for me. Cool. Oh, thank you, woman. That was like a therapy session. Should we just take some time just to close our eyes and like allow the energy that we created to leave our bodies and return to the state that we were once in, our happy place? Visualize that person you love and that food you want to eat, or that person you want to eat.
Ooh, just yes.
Indulge.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.